having problems there.
That is, why does he get so paranoid about the recorder? Pull a Seth move, huh? Okay, tonight, from 2013, we're talking about Thor 2, the next most recent Marvel movie. They're not all summer movies anymore. Was Iron Man 2 a summer movie? It was a summer movie, right?
I think Iron Man 2 was, yeah.
It was like 2 years after the first one or something. But yeah, but Thor is in November, and Captain America is going to be in April.
I mean, it's Guardians of the Galaxy. They've got so many of them now.
Yeah, right now they just have to do that. And they got Netflix shows, and they got the TV show. So this is sort of a follow-up to the first Thor movie, and it's...
One day this Marvel thing is going to take off to the point where they're going to expand into, like, print media.
Well, that's kind of the... that's why I can't read Marvel comics really anymore. Not the main stuff, because it's so written, I think, with plans for movies and structured that way. Like the popular movie characters are the ones that get the most comics and stuff. And they keep reinventing the wheel and... going back to issue one and issue one again and then issue one again, and it's like there's no sense that it's like there's a consistent through line of a story. Even it's like, how many different X-Men teams does Wolverine lead on top of being in the Avengers and everything else? It's like, just because he's a popular enough character to have his own movie doesn't
mean... he in the current Avengers lineup right now?
Yeah, he's been in the Avengers for a while though.
I mean, like, is he actually in the Avengers right now? They have different lineups all the time.
I think so. But I'm not 100%. You know what? I would say no. Not in the Hickman stuff that he's writing right now. Which is probably going to be pretty heavily based on what they do for the third Avengers movie. Will probably be a lot of the Hickman Infinity stuff. Because it seems like they're setting it up for the whole Thanos. And even with this movie, with the Thor 2, the secret ending has Benicio Del Toro getting one of the Infinity Stones. Which I think will be relevant to the Guardians of the Galaxy movie that comes out in the summer.
Right.
So that's the direction they're going with all these movies. They're trying to kind of connect them. Let's see. I didn't read any reviews, but I kind of heard some kind of middling to non-promising things about this. So I went into it with pretty low expectations. I enjoyed the first one. I've enjoyed all the Marvel movies, even Iron Man 2.
Like, Iron Man 2 sucked.
I didn't love it, but I mean, it's been on FX a lot recently, and I've been catching scenes of it. And I think it's like, for me, it just comes down to...
Iron Man 2 was terrible.
No, but I like Sam Rockwell in it, though. And the scenes with him are fun. And so, like, I would stop and watch those scenes when he's, like, doing the gun demonstration for the army. And, like, I mean, I don't know. You know, it's definitely probably the least... I think it's maybe a problem they have. It was sort of their standalone characters. They have sort of a sophomore slump. I think we can agree that Iron Man 3 was better than Iron Man 2.
Easily.
And in some ways better than one, I think.
Mm.
It was a different movie, but...
One wasn't really that great as like a movie, but it was phenomenal at the origin of the character and introducing the character and the characterization and the act, you know, all that sort of stuff was great. So that overall, I think one is probably still the best of them, but you're right that that story is just not that interesting.
Yeah. So now we have Thor, and the Thor character is tricky because it's this, like, where do you... In the Marvel universe, where it's not so much about gods, it's more about, like, science superheroes that are blasted with rays or radiation, and then they get their powers, or they're mutants, you know? There's sort of a half-assed pseudoscience explanation for a lot of the superheroes in the Marvel universe. I mean, leaving out, like, Doctor Strange and stuff, so... So the thing with the Thor character, I guess, borrowing... And I don't know, I've never read any Thor comics. I've never really been that interested in the character. But, you know, so they make it all... They make it aliens, basically.
Yeah.
And so it's some... You know, that sort of gets around the supernatural side of it a little bit. And so there's more of that in this movie. There's definitely a lot more. Like I said, I went into it with... Not with great expectations. Kind of expecting it to be kind of...
Are you going to see the new Great Expectations?
They're making another one of those? Are you serious?
Yeah.
That'll be like the eighth one, right?
Yeah.
God, what is it with the dick? Does it just have an appeal to, like...
I don't know.
Like a female audience or something? It's kind of a soap opera thing, right?
Always with the females. Dickens, at the height of his fame, everybody read Dickens, okay?
I'm sure. Men, but not now. But not now.
Women?
In terms of the movie, in everybody. Terms of that type of movie, though, it's a soap opera kind of movie, right?
Isn't Red Great Expectations?
No.
It's not a soap opera.
Isn't it the one where it's like the kid? No, I'm thinking of the one with the woman.
Don't you remember the South Park one that Malcolm McDowell narrated?
Yeah.
That's Great Expectations.
Right. But it has to do... Isn't it like a woman that's mean to a guy?
Yeah. It's all about a conniving, revenge-minded old woman who raises a young girl to break a male's heart so she can feast on his icy tears, basically.
Which is really, really weird. And I guess you could call it one of the... an early misogynist work, huh?
Oh my gosh.
Well, wouldn't that be what it is if it's about a woman being raised to become a...
Yeah,
a sure. man-hating, vicious person written by a man that views women that way or something? Anyway, no. This isn't a Great Expectations podcast. We're not doing a literary podcast here. I'm trying to think if I've read any actual Dickens stuff. I don't think I have. I probably should at some point. Is it good?
Most of the English teachers I ever had said Dickens was their favorite writer.
Interesting. Just from like the way he writes?
Because
there's the stories they tell, and then there's the actual...
He was just a great writer. I mean, there was a lot of coincidental plotting and stuff that went on, but he was just... There was a touch of humor to right. everything, and he knew how to tug the heartstrings, and he was just, you know...
I think Oliver Twist. I think we read that in my freshman English class.
There you go.
So I was like, I didn't read it myself, but like our class read it. Anyway, yeah, so back to Thor. So this one is a lot more... It had a lot more... mostly it was in it. It was sort of a cosmic story, I guess. Or it was all set in Asgard, right?
Mostly, yeah.
Just sort of like straight up dark elf monster creatures want to make the world dark because with the beginning of the universe or some other high-end epic stuff that's goofy shit that's going on. I think if you... any of the problems that I noticed in the movie in terms of plotting and things all felt like... not necessarily forgivable, but for the most part forgivable because it's a comic book movie, kind of, you know? Like, it's not this sort of high-minded sort of trying to be realistic.
Here's the issue with the Marvel characters. They can only spin the wheel so many times on what they're about.
Right.
And in the comics, there's limited space, so... they just touch on each person, especially in the case of the Avengers. In the comics, you touch on people and what their goal is and what their personality is like and whatever drives them, whatever that is. And in these movies, you're devoting 2+ hours to each of these people every time, over and over.
Right.
And you can only have somebody whose defining characteristic is what drives them change that or change their goals so often because you really can't... you can't have these characters develop too much into something else. That's something that happens on a TV show, which is interesting, where somebody can turn into somebody else completely by the end of it.
Or in a single feature where it's not like you need to keep going using this right. character.
You know, a lot of people complain about the fact that just about every movie is an origins movie. And then afterwards you get into other stuff. But Iron Man 2 wasn't great. You know, like they run out of... good stories to tell quickly after the origin in some of these cases.
Just dumb because there's a lot of material for all these
but
characters.
I would argue that the origin story is it will always be the most important thing, and it is the defining thing about the character, and it's always the thing where you get the reason that drives them, and that defines all these character. Why do they do what they do? And Stark figures that out in the first one, and then he refigures that out in the second one,
yeah.
and then in the third one. It's not so much that. It was a better movie than the second one because he wasn't having to refigure out stuff. But he's always learning something new. And in Avengers, he's learning something new. And in Avengers, that movie, one of the reasons why I think it works so well was because, just like in the comic book, it has time to touch on these things.
Yeah.
That's it. It doesn't have to completely focus on them. That's why I didn't like Captain America because Chris Evans' characterization was not strong enough. It wasn't it wasn't forceful enough because just reading the comic books, every iteration of Captain America by any different writer, and you get his overwhelming morality and
right,
and all
right.
that stuff. And that's what defines him. And that's what, you know, it's not just him being from that era. It's who he was before.
Yeah. Okay.
And Chris Evans is just, to me, he's a comedy actor. He's a comedian actor. He's not a comedian, but he's like a comedy actor. And I don't think he can pull it off. But in The Avengers, you didn't notice it as much because he's in bits and pieces of it. And he did some awesome stuff. Captain America the movie, you can see that weakness on full display the whole time.
Okay.
Thor, the first one, if you break it down in what the movie is and the set pieces and the problems with the chemistry between Portman and... Not that it's a chemistry problem, but it's a problem in writing. It's a problem in... I don't believe their relationship exists or is real. Or that he would be interested in her whatsoever.
Yeah, there's not... They don't ever give you a good moment to connect them.
It's got a lot of problems. Thor, the first Thor, has a lot of problems. And I love that movie just because of his characterization.
Yeah.
And the main... One of the things about it is there's the fish out of water thing, which is always funny. But it's just his arrogance. He's right? So... In the second movie, it's got a lot of those same problems. It's got...
Well, they focusing again on the relationship a lot, which you'd think that they would take
it. That should be a strong thing, but Portman's so mousy and ineffectual all the time. Like, what is she there for? She's not believable as a scientist.
No, she isn't.
She just goes gaga over him, and she gets all breathless and swoony.
Right, yeah.
And I still don't understand, I'm imagining this, but as I'm watching... Every conversation of his, I feel like he's looking at her like, I shouldn't have done this.
Right.
And then a fight breaks out. He's like, oh, I gotta go. It's a fight. Yeah. And he takes off and, you know. So now they've taken away the arrogance because he's changed. Right. Yeah. So what's left for him? And I'm not saying that it's a bad character still. And Hemsworth does well with him. He's still Thor, you know, and
the character's still there.
The character's still there.
And Loki's still good.
And Loki was great. He's fantastic. So for the first half of this movie, I was thinking this might be the worst Marvel movie I've seen yet. And then throughout the second half of it, suddenly they turned on the humor switch.
Right.
And something funny happened like every 5 or 10 minutes. And by the end of it, I was very pleasantly surprised. I also wasn't expecting much from it.
Right.
The comedy touches that happened throughout it were actually after the first half. For some reason, they weren't in the first half at all. Really strange.
Yeah, first half was... I remember feeling like once they get to Asgard, then it's mostly there. But there's like a... It feels like there's... It's overlong with like Portman like and what's your face walking around in that weird building and stuff. And just for me, it seems like at one point I'm sitting there watching this and I'm like, this just doesn't feel like an adventure comic book movie right now. It feels like... Like a scene from a weird suspense horror movie or something, which I mean it's kind of nice that you can kind of get out of the genre a little bit, but then it totally throws itself into the genre and it's lasers and rainbow bridges and all kinds of other shit, which is
it's pretty trippy if you really sit back and look at what the first two and especially this one are about and the different locales it takes. It's pretty trippy stuff.
Oh, yeah.
And they had some good enemy character design, the dark elves, the masks and stuff they wear are pretty frightening. But like all the ones that aren't the main guy, and then the condemned or whatever he's called, the corrupt.
Yeah.
What was he called? The craven.
The cursed. Something like that. Yeah.
Except for those two guys, the rest of them just looked like wimpy little guys who got killed pretty easily.
Yeah, they were just faceless characters in those part. And I mean the whole thing is it's like they were
but the design for thousands like actually years. So when they have that fight, well, that last fight on the Dark World, he fights that cursed guy. A lot of that stuff looked like Prometheus. Like it looked, you know, it was an overlarge character and a lot of like the same kind of design. They had him move a little bit slower because to show off his size and the way the planet looked and stuff. It was pretty cool. So there was some kind of good looking stuff in there. The bad guy being was interesting for a while, and then it's like, you know, they're going to run out of interesting bad guys, and they already kind of have, you know, like it's just there. That guy's just there to kind of move the plot along.
The bad guy,
right? You know,
he wants power, he wants evil, this whatever, and
Christopher Eccleston.
So there's not a lot to the villain in this.
No, there's not. And I made the point to Ryan, who I saw it with. I was like, you know what's funny is that... So this guy's in the Avengers. And this wasn't just an event where, like, in the Iron Man movies, the solo ones, it's like, you know, the world isn't at stake. It's like there's a smaller area that's at stake, or it's him himself, or someone else himself, and there's some sort of business deal that will be... So that makes sense why all the other Avengers wouldn't show up, right? But in this case, this was the destruction of the universe, and so I felt like the clip they should have showed after the previews or after the credits would have been Stark or somebody else calling Thor up and being like, hey man, why didn't you tell us what was going on? Yeah, of the universe. I could have been there. Well, I would have shown up.
I was thinking about this though. The way that they frame that in terms of it like happening mostly on Asgard is, or the Dark World or whatever.
Yeah.
Kind of makes that work because it really isn't like the alien ship shows up on Earth till like the last 10 minutes. In which
right,
case,
but they knew so it was going to.
Yeah, well, they didn't necessarily.
Couldn't at least Captain Britain have been there?
Captain Britain, that's true. I wonder if that would fall under like one of the mutants or something. Anyway.
And this was the funniest thing. So I'm before Ryan and I go to lunch before we watch the movie, mm-hmm. and he mentions that he's been watching a lot of Chuck.
Oh, with Zachary Levi?
Yeah.
Was he not that character in the first
one? He was not the character
in the first
one. And so he replaces that guy who looks like Errol Flynn
yeah.
in the second one. And we're sitting there, and neither of us recognized him for a while, but I noticed how out of place the guy looked, and I was like, that's not the guy from the first one. And he looks kind of like Zachary Levi, except it looks like his nose is broken, maybe. And then after a while, Ryan actually looked it up halfway through, and he was like, dude, that's Zachary Levi.
Him, yeah.
And he was so bad. He was just channeling Cary Elwes.
A little bit.
That's all he... And Cary Elwes, who, by the way, is American, not British. So he was channeling somebody who fakes a British accent for his British roles and mm-hmm. faking his accent to sound like him. He was just awful. And this is the funny thing. The majority of the film was filmed in England or Iceland.
Right. So they could have got an English actor.
They got Christopher Eccleston to be the bad guy, and he just wears makeup the whole time and barely says anything. And they had to... Some producer was like... You know, they're about to hire some guy off the street to play the new Errol Flynn character. And some producer goes, no, whoa. Did you guys even consider Zachary Levi?
Yeah.
Let's get him on a... Let's pay him a bunch of money. Let's get him on a first-class flight out here.
Let's get Chuck.
And let's put a ill-fitting blonde wig and blonde mustache on him. And by the way, he's a generally swarthy-looking white guy with kind of olive skin and dark hair, and it always looks great when you put super blonde fake hair on those people, because then they just look like they're made out of gold all the time. Their skin, their hair, everything. And then you just have him say stupid stuff. Like, I felt like the director every once in a while was like, when's the last time we had Levi on screen? Let's get him in here. Let's give him another line.
Yeah.
There had to be someone going like, no. No,
I don't understand the casting situation there. Maybe the other guy, the Errol Flynn guy, wanted more money, or maybe he wasn't available, or who knows what.
I've heard the Marvel strong arming tactics. So.
Yeah, well, yeah, we've heard about what happened with what's his name, the first.
Norton.
Rhodey.
Oh, no, I was talking about.
You're talking about Norton.
No, I was talking about Robert Downey Jr. situation.
Yeah, right.
Like
yeah.
he bent them over the barrel, but everyone else apparently is like they're basically telling them you're not getting raises per film. We may even pay you less per film to cut overhead. And what are you going to do? Walk away from this? They're kind of doing ultimatums to people. Apparently, Chris Evans they did it to. I think Hemsworth.
Probably, yeah. Well, I mean, you know.
And then Ruffalo walked in. He's like, I'll take anything.
Yeah, right.
Give me any money you want. I'm usually in indie films.
I mean, they'll probably... I don't see them making like a fourth Avengers movie. I don't know how it would work.
They're all under contract through three.
Three, yeah. And then things
and then
change.
And then three of their own individual things as well. Oh, so like at the end of it, you know, you watch the two... You know, there's the secret ending, then the secret ending.
Right,
you watch both. And then afterwards it says Thor will return, a James Bond series.
Like a James Bond thing, yeah.
That
second secret ending was not worth waiting through the credits for. There's really nothing
to
it.
No, no.
It was kind of like, we knew he was going to go back to Earth.
And then you see that beast that got teleported and it's chasing
birds.
It's
just sort of a joke, yeah.
Again, no Captain Britain.
Nope. Captain Britain didn't show up to save the day. No Excalibur, no Nightcrawler, or Kitty Pryde, or anything. Yeah, I mean, the only real arc there was, like you said, they chose to sort of focus more on this love thing that, just like you said, just didn't really connect, wasn't really well set up in the first one. So you've got, like, the girl that he's known his whole life that he fights with.
Yeah.
That would make more, that Odin's like, you should probably just get with her because she's going to live 5,000 years like you, you know? And
well, you can't bring logic into it, but
but
that aside... What about, what about chemistry? What about, you know, the things that look interesting are anything with anyone in Black Widow, because there's banter and there's repartee, and it's like a His Girl Friday situation.
Right. the work wife, if you read Hawkeye.
You want there to be conflict.
Right.
Conflict breeds interesting love connection in these things.
Yeah.
And instead, it's a out-of-place, gawking female and somebody who looks like he doesn't really, isn't really that into her. Yeah, and that just bothers me.
It just doesn't strong enough for it to be like, well, I don't want to be the king. I want to go back to Earth and live with this girl and just be on Earth or whatever, which I guess is what the second one kind of leads to. Though that was never that strong a through line. I think the stuff with Loki was good. they were pretty effective with the mom thing. The fact that, like, that happening, the way they set that all up, like when she says, like, am I not your mother? And then he kind of has to, like, you can tell that, like, that's one person who in his life he's felt, and you can't, like that connected, that's a fundamental thing. And so that made all
Loki stuff was great.
All of his activities and his actions were, like, I loved that, like, how he was pretending, like, when he first comes to see him, and then he drops the thing and you see that he's just a mess and he's ruined his room when he found out that his mom was killed. Right. And that worked to connect them, to make them work together. You don't know quite what's going on with the ending. Like, I guess he didn't die, and he
he didn't. You knew that from earlier, because you see the soldier who's supposedly looking over the body, and he's like glowing for a second. Like he had just transformed.
And then so I guess he goes and knocks out his dad and takes over and becomes the new kid. Yeah. But as his dad, he gave him the chance to become, you know, so that was kind of...
Because that's what Odin would have done.
Right, well, right, exactly. And so the Loki character is probably the strongest of the two movies, I would say, which is good then, because you get that kind of villain angle. And even in the fact that he did what he did in the Avengers, it was kind of like...
He's like an anti-hero. He's kind of the closest thing this Marvel has to an anti-hero. In these movies.
Yeah, I mean, I guess. I mean, he is the trickster. He is the... He wants...
Despite power, the genocide.
Power and corruption. Yeah, but...
Outside of the genocide.
But... Yeah, I guess. I don't know. I'm trying to think about the... the genocide was what Odin did to the Frost Giants. Yeah. Not, Loki, you know, tried to take over a planet, but I don't think... It never seemed like he was particularly motivated. Maybe what's-his-name was. Maybe the aliens were.
Right.
But anyway... So, I mean, I don't know. I'd be hard-pressed to give this thing... I got a kick out of it. And you talk about these movies that have gotten kind of overbrought and bloated. This one was under 2 hours. It's not a lot. It's like an hour and 54 minutes. So it doesn't feel short, but it's not insanely overlong either. So that's nice.
Because, I mean, you know, a young man on the move about town like you, you got places to go, you got things to do.
I just don't want to sit in a theater for 3 hours when I could have been 2 hours.
Overall, I liked it. I give it a 3 out of 5.
Yeah, I'm exactly in the same place as you. And then we got some good trailers for this one. We got the new X-Men trailer. Could be good. Just because it's got so many people in it, I don't even know which direction it's going to go.
Yeah, I don't know about that.
I've never read the Days of Future Past storyline. I've seen the adaptation that they sort of did. I don't think it was even all that direct from the cartoon, because it's got Apocalypse in it. I don't think Apocalypse is in the original story. I don't remember if Trask is even in the original story, but they got Dinklage in there as Trask, and they got the Sentinels and all that other stuff. So if nothing else, they're creating something big by blending the First Class and the original series, so that could be good. You're not as keen on it, but I like the trailer for Captain America 2. I think that could be really good.
It looks better than the first one.
I mean, the whole idea... Because it's like I was always saying to you, it's like now you put him there, and you can already see that a lot of the conflict is going to be between him and S.H.I.E.L.D. It's going to be like, wait, we attack the bad guys when they're bad. Yeah. We don't do, you know, this whole concept of like...
But it sounds really stupid when you say it as simply as he says it. Well, I thought we were supposed to attack people after they've killed 300 million, right?
Right, yeah. No, that phrase is...
I thought we were supposed to punish people after they've mass murdered a bunch of people.
Right, exactly.
That's what Batman's there for.
Yeah, exactly.
Batman doesn't let them do it.
It looks like, I mean, I don't know. It looks like it's going to have the problem where it's going to be try to be a little... I mean, like, they're going to crash a helicarrier and stuff. Like, it's going to get big and explosive. Looks like
pretty huge, yeah.
But it's also going to try to have some of this sort of... I mean, it's clearly going to borrow really heavily from the Ed Brubaker stuff, which is cool. I mean, Brubaker did what I think Captain America set in modern times is best played as, like, an espionage thriller story with action. And the one thing that I don't like about it from the trailer that I can see... And it might just be that they're just using this one scene a lot in the trailer, is it looks like he's walking around in plain clothes, but still carrying the shield all the time.
That's sweet. That's what he should do.
I think that's
dumb. Uniform looks stupid. Captain America's stupid.
Yeah, I know. The new uniform I don't like. It's like black or something. It's like trying to look like a shield uniform, which maybe that'll be a plot point, like when he becomes his own thing and isn't part of S.H.I.E.L.D., which will probably be
like
how the movie
just
went.
Like an Iron Patriot.
So, I don't know. I'm excited for that one. I think that... I'm hoping that I'll like that one. I just like the beginning. Like, there's this sort of sense of kind of weird, kind of hopeless nihilism in him. When she's like, why don't you want to ask her out? You know, he's like, I'm too busy. And he just jumps out of the plane. Like, does he have a parachute? I'm like, no. And they just sort of... like, they don't really play it for laughs. They play it kind of like... maybe he just doesn't want to be alive
anymore. They should have had those two guys look at each other as soon as he said, I'm too busy, and jump out, and they both go, gay. He's I miss Bucky.
Yeah, it'll be interesting to see how they play the relationship between him and Black Widow. Looks like she's going to be pretty prominent in the story. But she's always been, or between her and the Winter Soldier, depending on how her character evolves. I don't know if they've established if all of her Russian stuff or not.
They've kept her pretty straightforward so far.
Yeah, I mean, in Avengers, they hinted at a little bit of, like, backstory stuff with her, but it seemed more related to...
they played her pretty straight.
...to Hawkeye and not, like, she was a...
She's pretty good.
...Russian
assassin. She's been
pretty
good in it, and I think she was pretty good in the Avengers.